You're listening to Away With Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. And striding forward with his chest puffed out is our illustrious quiz guy, John Chinesky. John, welcome.
Welcome. Make way. I take large steps. How are you? Hi, guys.
It's the Monopoly guy.
It's me. It's Mr. Monopoly. That's right. You know, guys, sometimes a word is so fun to say that you just don't want to stop. Often, I'll take the last syllable of a word and I'll repeat it over and over, especially if it makes some sort of grammatical sense. For example, I'm so enthralled by a certain luxury fashion house in Spain that I am very much Balenciaga-gaga. As you can see, I've done the last syllable three times. Ga-ga-ga. Balenciaga-gaga. I'll give you a tortured and overwritten clue to a phrase consisting of a polysyllabic word and another word that repeats the last syllable twice. Like, when playing a simple game with a toddler, it's a real faux pas to forget to reveal your face again, and that would be a...
Peek-a-boo-boo.
Peek-a-boo-boo-boo. Peek-a-boo-boo-boo. Yeah, let's have three of the last syllable. Yeah. Here we go. My business plan is this. I'll find a chain of islands, and on each one I'll open a nightclub with music and dancing. I plan to be the master of the...
Archipelago-go-go.
Oh, yes, the archipelago-go-go. Very good. For Halloween, I want to be a classic spooky vampire, but I also want to be a ballerina. I've got it. I'll wear a...
Tutu.
Yeah, do you know a classic spooky vampire?
Oh, Nosferatu tutu.
Nosferatu tutu. Yes. They say that these big flightless birds are extinct, but guess what? I found one in Denver. What is it?
Colorado dodo.
Colorado dodo. Yes. Everyone ridiculed Nelson Muntz when he invested in a company that makes both musical instruments and motorcycles, but now they're the biggest, and he's having the last laugh. Maybe Martha's having
Yamaha.
The last laugh.
Yamaha.
Yes. Yamaha. Very nice. Your pizza sauce recipe has entirely too much wild marjoram. Too much spice in the sauce is an... There's another name by wild marjoram, or sweet marjoram goes by the way.
How about... an oregano no-no.
Yes, that's an oregano no-no. Don't do that. I could always count on my grandfather to have some candy in his pocket. He knew I especially liked dum-dums. That's why I called him...
Lollipop Pop-Pop.
Lollipop Pop-Pop. Yeah, very good. Finally, as an expert in toys from cities around the world, I can tell you that the best hula hoops are made in Ottawa, the best frisbees are made in London, and for string toys, nothing beats a...
Tokyo yo-yo.
Yes, Tokyo yo-yo. You guys did fantastic. Great job.
Thank you, John, for the quiz. We appreciate it, as always.
Bye, John.
Bye.
All of John's quizzes and all of our past episodes are on our website at no cost to you. At waywardradio.org. You can also find more than a dozen ways to reach us so that you can be on the show. Go to our website, waywardradio.org.
Hey there, you have a way with words.
Hi, this is Mary Lou Brown from Memphis, Tennessee. I was actually calling in because years ago, 1972, I think, I was a young intern at a newspaper in Memphis, and I had an eccentric assistant managing editor who would say, Mary Lou, I'm off to the salt mine, or I'm going to the salt mine. And so, you know, I didn't know what he meant. You know, some other people told me, you know, he was going downstairs to check on the paper or something, but I just didn't know where that phrase came from. And so I was curious about it. And then also a question about when we wrote stories back then, before computers, we used to end stories with -30-. And I just knew that meant the end of the story, but I don't know where that terminology came from. So I was just curious about it, and I listen to y'all every Sunday on my way home from church. And so I thought, well, I'm going to call and ask you.
Well, Mary Lou, we're glad you called. We can handle both of those. I just want to note that eccentric managing editor is kind of required for the newspaper business.
I was going to say it's redundant.
Oh, yes.
So let's deal with this to the salt mine first. Unfortunately, it's got a sad story behind it, and it originally referred to sending dissidents and prisoners to the Siberian salt mines, both before and after the Russian Revolution, where they would serve their time in harsh prison camps, and upwards of 90% of the people who went there did not leave alive. And so it was, it's kind of originally started as a way to say, you know, I dislike my job, and my job is kind of like the Siberian salt mines. And you will find early examples where when people say I'm going to the salt mines, they say I'm specifically going to the Siberian salt mines, and they mean I'm going to my job or going to do my work or going to do a hard task. And over the years, it became what we refer to as ameliorated, which is the harshness of their original reference was lost. And it just became a more gentler term, a gentler reference, and the original harsh connotation was lost.
Well, that's very interesting because both of my children are from Russia,
oh.
And one's from east of Siberia, Komsomolsk.
Well, there
and
we go.
So that's very very interesting. I've read many many books on Russia, but that never stuck with me. So that's interesting. Yeah.
The other one, to end a bit of writing or a bit of copy with a dash 30 dash or even a hash mark 30 hash mark or a pound 30 pound mark, actually has a really, really complicated story because everyone in the newspaper business decided to look into it. And when they didn't find an acceptable answer, they made their own. The Newswriter's Handbook by Rob Melton, for example, collected 18 different supposed origin stories for it. And they're all kind of lacking in the true detail, the truth that you want there. You'll also find other variants like three X's or three pound signs or hash marks, whatever you want to call them. But when I looked into it, what I found was that you can find people in the printing business, which I think is directly allied with the newspaper business and has been for a long time, as far back as the 1880s, discussing its origin. And one editorial person remembering from the 1860s, and sure enough, if you look in the 1860s, you can find in a book by a fellow named Orrin Wood, it's called The Plan of Telegraphic Construction. He talks about 3030 being a telegraphic code meaning finis, F-I-N-I-S, which means the end. Like today we might see at the end of a book or a film. And that code 30 is just one of a long list of numbers used for very common things like hello or thank you or yes or no. As far as I'm concerned, as far as I can tell, that 30 was simply just the next number in line when they were trying to come up with a list of numbers to represent common expressions. So they had all these expressions that they needed to use in the telegraph. Yes, no, thank you, hello, please. And the next in line for end was 30. There's no other meaning to it. There's no happy story. There's no complicated story at all. It's just 30 was the next one. And then they moved on to 31 for the next expression.
You know, that sounds like it would be something that would be correct, though, because, you know, I couldn't figure anything else out.
Like so. 31 is, do you understand? And 32 is, I understand. So it's they're all really basic stuff.
Well, thank you for doing that research. I enjoy listening to your show. I always learn something.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure. You call again sometime, all right?
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care, Mary Lou. Share your language from your workplace with us. 877-929-9673. Here's another bit of slang used by those researchers in Antarctica, smoko. Do you know what smoko is, Grant?
Oh, yeah, that's Australian for a smoke break. So there must be Australians there. Or is it older than that and it's just been handed down from research team to research team?
Oh, that's cool. I don't know. I love the idea of different generations of researchers coming to this isolated station and bequeathing to the next generation some of that slang.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, right? Right, like the Scots term you mentioned earlier, that would the electric, what was it?
Electric soup for fortified wine.
Yeah, like that'll last and last until people just don't know where it came from.
Exactly. Let us know the slang in your workplace. We'd love to hear it. 877-929-9673.
Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, I'm Claudia Harrelson, calling from Terrible, North Carolina.
Hi, Claudia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Well, I have a question. It's springtime here, and all of the beautiful yellow flowers that everyone else calls daffodils are blooming. But when I was growing up, my grandmother, who lived with us, always called those flowers jonquils. And that's what everyone in our family called them. In fact, I never heard the term daffodils for those flowers until I was actually in high school. And we were reading the poem by Wordsworth called Daffodils. And there was a picture, and I said, those aren't daffodils. Those are jonquils. So I've been wondering all these years why it is in my family that we call them jonquils instead of daffodils.
Can you spell that for us?
I think it would have been spelled J-O-N-Q-U-I-L-S. It was the word my grandmother used.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Well, yes, I had the same experience, Claudia. I grew up in Kentucky, and my Virginia-born mother used to always call them jonquils. And it was jarring the first time I ever heard somebody say daffodil for that particular flower. But here's what we can tell you about those flowers. Both of them, daffodils and jonquils, belong to the botanical genus called Narcissus. And you may remember from Greek mythology that Narcissus was the guy who was really, really handsome, and he was transfixed by his own image in a pond. He couldn't tear himself away. He was just looking down into this pond like a mirror. And that's where we get the word narcissist, by the way.
Yes.
But these flowers often bloom near ponds, and so that's part of the reason that they're called Narcissus. Daffodils is a general term for all of those flowers in the genus Narcissus, and jonquils are a specific variety of Narcissus. They're called Narcissus jonquilus in the Latin nomenclature. So daffodil is the general term, and jonquil is the specific term for that particular kind of flower, but you know, Claudia, when it comes to names of flowers and sometimes names of foods, those names are just really slippery, the colloquial names for them. And that's why the Linnaean classification system is so helpful in identifying specifically what a flower is, because a lot of people use those terms interchangeably, jonquil and daffodil.
Okay. Well, I've never heard anyone else call them a jonquil. But that was what we called them. And to this day, and this was all a long time ago, but I still, when I see them blooming in the spring, the first thing that comes to my mind is that, oh, the jonquils are blooming. Then I stop myself when I'm in a group of people to say, nope, nobody else knows what a jonquil is. I have to call them a daffodil.
Claudia, I do. And a lot of other people do.
I do too, particularly
in the South. A lot of people call them jonquils. Some people have called them jonnyquils, which I think is really cute.
Okay, I've not heard that term before.
Claudia, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care of yourself.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There are lots of wild trips you can take through language with us. Come, join us, 877-929-9673, or email us words@waywardradio.org.
Welcome to Away with Words.
Hey, how are you? I'm Jay from Marana, Arizona.
Hey, Jay, welcome to the show. What can we do for you?
A couple of months ago, my nephew was visiting me, and he asked me for something cool to drink. I went to the fridge. I pulled out a can, and then I pulled out an insulated sleeve to put it in to keep it cold, and he screeches at me, and he goes, ooh, a koozie. I'm going, a what? You know, I'm from New York. I've heard everything. I never heard koozie before. So I looked at it, and I said, okay, I've always called them insulated sleeves. And after I gave it to him, I went and started doing my homework. And I tracked koozie to two places. Number one, there is actually a trademark on the term koozie here in the United States, capital K-O-O-Z-I-E. And then I tracked it back to Australia, where they call these can coolers koozies over there. But then I tracked it even further back over to England many years ago, when they used to put their tea kettles on their potbelly stoves and heat up the water. And when they took them off to keep the water hot, the women had knitted these woolen caps, and they put them over the teapots, and they called them cozies. And I can understand that. You know, on a cold day, you want to kind of get cozy under a blanket, but I haven't been able to get any further back than that. I don't know where the term came from, and I got to tell you, I never heard koozie before.
Jay, you made a really good start here. Let me break some of that down and correct a few things here. First, let's work backward from that. First, they didn't used to put cozies on their tea kettles. They still do. Second of all, the men and the women knit them. It's not just a female thing. Also, they put them on eggs as well. They can have an egg cozy. And it's not only the British that do it. You can find these throughout the world. People like to keep their kettles warm. The Australian koozie comes from the American koozie. It's not something they invented, although they do have stubby holders, S-T-U-B-B-I-E, for the stubby is a short bottle of beer. And those date from around the mid-1970s. And the trademark that you found dates to, it was first filed in 1979 by, I believe, by somebody by the last name McGow, M-C-G-O-U-G-H. Right. It was first misfiled in 1979, then later refiled and finally granted in 1981, but then it expired or lapsed in 2001. Mm-hmm. I believe it was refiled, and it's now owned by the Bic family of brands, B-I-C, the people who do the ink pens. So that's K-O-O-Z-I-E. But it looks like it's directly related to the cozy, as you noted, the tea cozy or the egg cozy.
Yeah, well, I've got to tell you, I was stunned when I heard this, because, I'm going, what is a koozie? I've never heard this before. And, of course, in the last couple of weeks, I've heard koozie all over the place.
Yeah, always, right?
That's how it goes.
The other night I was listening to Rachel Maddow, and she said koozie, and I said, wait a second. No, I haven't heard this ever, and all of a sudden it's popping up everywhere.
Well, Jay, now you know.
Well, I appreciate it. I figured if anyone's going to be able to give me any information on this, it's going to be you two.
Jay, thank you so much for your story and your entertainment.
Thanks a lot.
We appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 877-929-9673. Grant, I just learned the word stravenue. Do you know this word, stravenue?
It sounds like strode, so I would guess it's street plus avenue.
Oh, a strode?
A strode is a street plus a road.
You're exactly right. Apparently in Tucson and maybe nowhere else, I don't know. I've only heard of this in Tucson. A stravenue is a street running diagonally between an east-west street and a north-south avenue. And as you said, it's a combination of street and avenue. And the U.S. Postal Service actually has an official abbreviation for it. It's S-T-R-A, STRA.
I did not know that. Yeah, a strode is sometimes jokingly said to have the worst aspects of a street and the worst aspects of a road, particularly if you're a pedestrian.
Oh, wow. So are there strallies and strillivards? I don't know.
Well, pick up your strillophone and give us a call, 877-929-9673.